ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
Hello and welcome to The Country Hour. Brooke Neindorf with you. We are back to normal programming now with the Ashes, wrapped up yesterday. Brooke Neindorf with you. Another pretty warm one today, but temps have definitely dropped. How's it looking at your place? You can send me a text on 0467 922 783. Also coming up, Premier Peter Malinauskas met with locals in the Riverland yesterday with wine grape reps and all sorts, so we're going to hear from them very shortly. We're also going to check in with the CFS and find out how conditions are looking at the moment. We were hoping that they were going to call in for the start of the show, but what we might do is we'll go to our first story and we will come back to them very shortly. As I just mentioned, it was a visit from the Premier Peter Malinauskas yesterday to the Riverland. Very shortly, we're going to hear what the wine industry thought of that meeting. But it wasn't just wine grape growers that the Premier met with. He also met up with some grain growers. He popped down to the Mallee to visit Jock McNeil at his family's mixed sheep grain and loosened hay farm at Peruna. The 2026 Nuffield Scholarship recipient said drought conditions had been so tough that he had to actually abandon some of the very farming systems designed to combat it. And Mr. McNeil says the Premier's visit was a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, it was a bit of a surprise. I got the call from GPSA to say that Premier was coming through our area and if we wanted to catch up, and I sort of used the opportunity to, I guess, capitalise on having the Premier through our region just to, talk about the current drought situation that, we're currently facing and how tough it is at the moment just in, our region in particular.
And was he able to really get a good glimpse of, I guess, the Riverland's been probably one of the hardest hit with the drought. Was he quite surprised?
Yeah, he was. It was, as I said, I'd sort of take my hat off to him a bit. It was 45 degrees and he's still out there doing the rounds in the region. So, yeah, he certainly, I think we're only allocated 45 minutes with him, but we spent probably an hour and a half, talking through some of the local challenges and just how severe this local drought has been over the last 3 years, just to paint a real picture, because, it is quite bad.
Yeah, how are things looking at your place?
It's certainly dry. As I said, I looked through some of the data sets and from 2023 through to now, it's certainly the driest record recorded in history. And as I said, just some natural observations. You only got to look at some of the mallee trees, which are some of the most resilient species going around, and they're starting to drop their leaves and go brown. So it just, as I said, if that's a indicator of where it's at, I think it's shows how extreme it is at the moment.
Yeah, now there's these hot dry winds forecast, and I've heard that's been a really big extra issue for farmers in the Mallee, is the dust storms and ripping up the topsoil or ripping up grains when they were planted earlier. Yeah, it's a bit of a worry.
Yeah, it's certainly, like, it's been 2025, no doubt, has probably been the most challenging season for most farmers up our way. It's just, we've all invested heavily in technologies and farming systems to avoid situations like this, but 2025 was so extreme. Even the best farming systems came unstuck to a degree. Still amazing what we were able to achieve, but given the grain price collapse and still just the economics of farming at the moment with all our costs and the inflation, and then as I said, we're essentially getting early 90s pricing for grain, so it's nothing to get too excited about.
You were mentioning though that you've got some different technologies and techniques that you've been implementing, which you won an award for last year, and I understand you were talking to the Premier about some of them. Have they served you this last year?
Yeah, as I said, it's all just the farming system's continuous improvement, I guess, and always evolving. But as I said, essentially our area has come leaps and bounds in terms of farming systems with summer weed control and accurate seeding placement and nutrition placement and the farming systems and rotations we've got now. So I was just basically showing him some of the soil amelioration stuff we're doing to manage the constraints in our subsoils. But last year was not the right year to do that, and we actually abandoned most of our planned program for that just due to risk. When it wasn't raining and the winds kept picking up, we actually abandoned our plans for that.
So that's something you might be able to implement in future, but yeah, you had to put it on hold then.
Yeah, we did. Yep. So we abandoned it last year just given the conditions we were facing at the time, which was the right decision. There's going to be a lot of our area that's going to need fixing up because the wind erosion and the drought's been so extreme. So as devastating as it is, it's probably an opportunity to, I guess, hopefully reset and have a go at some of these techniques to, one, get the paddocks back into shape and also, yeah, provide extra production for next season or this season now.
And I understand it's probably the first time the Premier's been out to our region since the floods. How did you feel about that?
Yeah, as I said, I take my hat off to him for coming out and actually, yeah, getting boots on the ground and being out there and meeting with the people that are dealing with this drought and these conditions day to day. So certainly respect that. He was a great listener, took a lot of things on board, but at the end of the day, the ball's going to be in the government's court as to if they're going to be able to provide any support locally for the Riverland and the farmers that are facing drought.
Was there anything in particular you guys talked about what sort of support or programs could be needed to provide support?
The main discussion was around what GPSA has already been pushing for quite some time with the state government was access to low or no interest loans. So it was just, there was discussions around that because, yeah, access to capital is going to be the way that farmers are going to be able to rebound from drought. But yeah, as I said, the work that GPSA is doing on that front, basically the discussions around that.
Yeah, you mentioned, though, I guess a silver lining from a tougher year is that you guys were able to finish harvest up before Christmas and have time with your families.
Yep. Yeah, it was great to finish up in a timely manner. As I said, we're all sort of still processing, I guess, the hangover of 2025 and the grain price collapse and things like that. But, yeah, certainly a good opportunity to reset and start planning of, how we're going to attack 2026.
Paruna mixed farmer Jock McNeil speaking with Eliza Burlage about his season, but also about the visit from Premier Peter Malinauskas to his property yesterday. And we're going to hear very shortly about the meetings that some of the winemakers and grape growers had very shortly. But before that, let's go back to today's weather. And there are total fire bans across much of the state today, and it's the type of weather that has a lot of people on edge, but let's find out if it's how it's looking out there today. There's been a couple of grass fires already, so I just wanted to check in with the CFS to see how things are looking at the moment. And State Duty Commander Steve Salomon joins us now. Steve, thanks for coming on the Country Hour.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
First of all, a couple of grass fires down in the southeast this morning. How are things looking there?
Yeah, so we had a band of lightning move across the southeast overnight, and we had 16 fires identified and reported. The crews did some amazing work and managed to pull all of those up and control them. They've all now been handed back to the landowners, so they've done really well in some really tough, trying conditions in the last 12 hours or so to get that under control.
What other fires are still on the list at the moment?
So we do have two fires that we're watching and monitoring. They're located quite a way west over past Sejuna. So that's in areas that aren't impacting the community in any way at the moment. So we are just watching those and keeping an eye on them to make sure they're not going to pose any risk.
And there's one in the northwest pasture district as well, Yellowbinna.
So that is the one I was talking far over the west side.
Oh, okay,
Yeah, so the Yellowbinna fire, approximately 34,000 hectares, but a long way from any populated areas or freight routes, so we're not expecting any impact on the community at this stage.
And Yalata is the other one then as well on the west coast?
It is, yeah. Yep. So we're monitoring that one as well at a local level. Again, that one hasn't progressed very far. We are just keeping an eye on it to make sure that it doesn't cause us any issues into the future.
Yeah, because that's been going for a few days now, those two, haven't they?
It has, yeah. Yeah, both of those started some time ago, we believe, as a result of lightning, and we've just been keeping an eye on them.
How are things looking at the moment? What are conditions like out across the state at the moment?
So the wind change that we're expecting today is actually progressing across as predicted. It's currently coming through the Adelaide area. It's crossed across the top of the York Peninsula and is heading sort of northeasterly towards the top corner of the state. We'll see that continue to progress through the afternoon and into the evening tonight. We're seeing quite elevated wind conditions with that change as it comes through, which means if we should have a fire in the landscape, we'll see really erratic fire behaviour as that change passes across the top of it. So we are asking the community to still remain vigilant. We're obviously progressing our way through the day, and to this point in time, it's a good opportunity to thank the community. They have been very good. They've followed all of our directions so far. We haven't had any incidents of accidental fires starting, so we just ask them to continue with that level of vigilance through the rest of the afternoon, be mindful that the conditions haven't abated yet and that we do have a risk still out there that we have to manage this afternoon.
I'm joined by State Duty Commander Steve Salomon from the CFS. And Steve, just finally, we've been seeing these devastating bushfires in Victoria at the moment, and we'll hear probably more about them across ABC this afternoon. But will there be any need for SA firefighters to head there in the next few days?
Look, there are some really horrible fires over there. I'm sure people are seeing it all over social media at the moment. I suspect there will be a call for further assistance. We haven't been able to provide support up until now because obviously our focus and priority has been on ensuring we have capability here in South Australia to protect the local communities here. But as our weather improves over the coming days, there may very well be a further request for assistance. And if we can, we would like to support our counterparts interstate wherever possible.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Steve, thanks very much for your time, and stay safe. And, we appreciate everything that the CFS does, particularly on days like today.
That's all right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us. That was Steve Salomon, who is the State Duty Commander for the CFS. And coming up very shortly, we're going to hear about those visits from the Premier, Peter Malinauskas, who was in the Riverland the last couple of days. Brooke Neindorf with you. It's 17 minutes past 12.
The 2026 Australian Open. Hear it live and ad-free on ABC Sport Digital and take it with you on the ABC Listen app.
You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
And we just spoke to the CFS there about how conditions are looking at the moment. We'll check in with the Weather Bureau as well shortly. But I just wanted to remind you there is total fire bans today, as Steve Salomon had just mentioned. The West Coast, Eastern Eyre Peninsula, Lower Eyre Peninsula, Flinders, Mid-North, Mount Lofty Ranges, York Peninsula, Riverland, Murraylands, Upper Southeast and Lower Southeast are all extreme today. And the total fire ban will apply until midnight tonight. For more information, you can go to the CFS website, cfs.sa.gov.au. If the information hotline is 1800 362 361, and stay tuned to your local ABC radio throughout the day for any updates there as well. Now, let's go back to what we were hearing about before, the Premier, Peter Malinauskas, who's been in the Riverland to hear about the wine industry crisis. So what was the meaning, you know, was it deemed a success? Well, in a statement, Jim Markias, who's chair of Riverland Wine Industry Development Council, he called the meeting constructive and timely, and also said we were clear in outlining the very real and dire challenges facing the region, including sustained low grape prices, rising costs, and the pressure that this is placing on growers, winemakers, and regional communities. He also said we look forward to collaborating closely with the state government to progress meaningful actions that support growers and winemakers, protect regional jobs and help secure a sustainable future. Also in a statement, Amanda Dimas, chair of Riverland Wine Grape Growers Association, welcomed the Premier's commitment, and she said he listened to the concerns raised and we had a productive discussion about a range of practical solutions that could help stabilise the sector and support the long-term viability of the region. Now, the Premier also visited the vineyard of a fourth-generation wine grape grower family in Loxton. Courtney Hume, who is a member of the RWGA, says growers are going into their sixth year of low prices, but she said she was glad to have the opportunity to speak with the Premier at length about the situation.
Yeah, it was really good. I got contacted by one of his workers to see if we would be happy to host him. And we thought, yeah, we need to jump on this opportunity and have him come see what it's like here and hear from us face to face how the challenges are here. We found that it was a positive and constructive meeting with him, and it felt very genuine. He definitely took the time to listen and understand what's happening here in the Riverland.
The Premier visited your family, and you were there with Amanda Demas and Jim Marquis and a few other representatives. So you were all able to talk to him together as a group. And I understand it's something that a lot of wine grape growers and people in the industry have really have been calling for, as according to this letter. So, to be able to talk face to face with the Premier and really draw his attention to that, you know, how did that feel?
It was actually just really nice. It was nice to have such an informal discussion. It was really casual. It was just in the offices, and he spent quite a bit of time with us and really took on board all the concerns that we had with the industry at the moment, all the ideas that we had going forward. And we do believe that he is wanting to work with us in the next few weeks, and that gives us confidence that the issues are actually being taken seriously.
Yeah, how are things looking ahead of the vintage for this year for your family?
Like many in this region, we're under pressure. The grape prices are low this year and costs are high, and there's a lot of uncertainty heading into vintage. But as a business, we feel like we are managing, we are trying to diversify where we can with what we've got, but it is still challenging times for us. The meeting with the Premier was definitely encouraging, and the commitment that he had to continue the conversation with us and the other people present in the room was reassuring and gives us a bit of confidence that it is actually being taken seriously. I would also like to add, I do feel like there is a really strong collaboration at the moment in Riverland Wine and the associated groups, so the RWGA, RWIDC. I think they're doing an absolutely great job advocating for the Riverland, the growers and the wineries and the business. And they're really all working together to try and give a good and sustainable future for this industry. Yeah, it's very tough times, and anyone who's listening, if you know a grower at all, just check in on them and just, you know, catch up for a coffee and make sure that they're going okay.
100% true. That was Courtney Hume, who's a member of the Riverland Wine Grape Growers Association, speaking with Eliza Burlage about the visit from the Premier. I've had a text come through from Diane from Oraru. She says, I would say Malinauskas was about 2 years too late to visit the Riverland, which is some of the comments that we've had as well. But he's been there now, and fingers crossed that things keep moving forward for the wine industry, but also those farmers in drought that he met as well. Now, speaking of grain, we're a week into 2026 now. So what may producers expect from the grain markets this year? And could the uncertainty in Venezuela impact prices in the coming months? Commonwealth Bank agricultural economist Denis Woznesensky explains to Elsie Adamo what he's been observing.
Yeah, well, the first one is probably on what's happening to wheat markets. They've been going down for the last few years, especially after Russia invaded Ukraine. So we saw that large spike initially, saw record prices, and then prices weakened ever since, and they've been in this lull. Now, the interesting thing is that last year we had record production in Canada, record production in Argentina for wheat. Russia produced more than expected as well. And as a result, it weakened prices low. And now this year, if we just return to average production around the world, no one's breaking any records, you're still going to have this kind of, in the background, this increased consumption. And if you're no longer bringing records to the market, it doesn't mean that maybe towards the back end of this year, we see a bit more support for markets that we haven't seen in a while. So that's the key things I'll be watching. Last year, there's a lot of records being broken, North and Southern Hemisphere, for production. Will that be the same this year? If not, maybe the narrative changes a little bit. But for the time being, plentiful supplies, and that also actually applies for canola. The one big, I think, benefit for canola from the Australian perspective is that China is no longer buying canola from Canada, and the demand for Australian canola could rise as a result.
You've written extensively about how kind of these conflicts have influenced the market. Now, it's not a grain-producing nation, but we have heard this news about Venezuela. It's an oil producer. Could the movement there influence the grains market in any way?
Yeah, look, I think it probably warrants a deeper discussion, and we could talk about it for a while, but the things that just spring to mind right now, let's look at it from a canola perspective. So while Venezuelan agri markets isn't too relevant, it is from a energy perspective. If there is either rising or declining oil prices as a result of how things unravel with Venezuela and America and any other parties, we could see that translate to either higher or lower oil prices. That will then increase or decrease the demand for biofuel, and that'll impact canola. So let's say, for example, the situation gets more volatile, the price of oil goes up, that could increase the price of biofuel, because they kind of go together. They can compete in a fuel engine for space, increase the price of biofuel, and that'll increase the price of canola oil, supporting our canola prices. So that's the first way I see it impacting things. The second one is, and I discussed it thoroughly when I traveled through rural Australia last year, speaking to farmers and food producers, every time we see one of these geopolitical disruptions, even though this one seems very quick, and it ended quickly as well for the time being, every time we do see one of these, whether it's Venezuela, whether it's Ukraine, the Houthi rebel attacks in the Red Sea, what's happening with Israel and Iran, or what was happening until recently, it causes a lot more concern in markets. And then if you imagine that you are the leader of a country that is import exposed to food, including for wheat, you start thinking, how do I increase my food security and reduce import demand? And I think that's what the heads of a lot of countries could be thinking, the more of these disruptions that we see.
So I guess would the advice then for some of our producers be then, Dennis, that in 2026, you know, continue to expect the unexpected? We don't know if there will be another geopolitical disruption, but this does. We've had years now of regular disruptions to the market, really. Do you think that trend will be continuing?
I think the key takeaway is to be very switched on regarding what is happening in the market. It could make a significant impact to how farmers market their grain this year. And in fact, moving forward, these disruptions that we're seeing, they're not likely to go away. They're going to be around every year for the foreseeable future in one shape or form. And if you're looking at the market, you're more switched on about what's going on from a political sense. It's something you'll be able to take advantage of more than others. So definitely keep an eye on what's happening, especially in the key producing regions like the Black Sea. And also, I think one of the biggest factors I'm watching from a grain production standpoint is there any dryness come March, April, when Northern Hemisphere crops are coming out of dormancy? So right now, everything's under snow cover. It's going to start melting. In April, we'll know if crops are coming out of the ground into dry conditions or not. That could be one of the first factors that turns a bearish wheat market into something a bit more bullish.
And just spending a second now, Dennis, to look back, as we still are, I guess, only 1 week into the new year. Looking back at 2025, was there anything particularly in the market that surprised you last year that you weren't expecting?
I think one thing that surprised a lot of people more broadly was just the continued decline in wheat prices. Yes, there was more supply coming on the side of those who are typically large exporters, but I think there's also possibly more supply coming online in countries that are typically large importers, and that's for the previously mentioned kind of thought bubble that, you know, these countries that typically have been very large importers of grain, they're getting a bit concerned about what's happening from a geopolitical sense. How do I become less reliant on the rest of the world? And how do I produce a little bit more? Whether we talk about an Egypt or a China, Indonesia, even though they don't produce wheat, they do produce other goods. They're all thinking, you know, how do I improve my self-sufficiency just that little bit more so I can be less reliant on the rest of the world and have a bit more of a buffer locally if there are further disruptions? And I think that's one of the things causing, at least for now, that lower price environment. And as I said in the beginning, as we move through this year, if we don't see any significant, you know, records being broken around the world, if there's a drought suddenly appearing in the Black Sea, it still means prices could go higher. But I think that's the main thing that surprised a lot of the market last year, is this kind of unmovability of the global wheat market. It just declined and then just stayed low.
Commonwealth Bank agricultural economist Dennis Wozniacki speaking with Elsie Adamo. Brooke Nindorf with you. It's 28 minutes past 12. We'll head to the weather in just a tick.
80 years of the Country Hour, Australia's longest running radio show.
Sarah and David from Winky Christmas Trees just wishing the Country Hour a happy 80th birthday.
This is the Country Hour on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
Let's find out what's been happening in the weather across the state. There's been a few records broken yesterday as well. Daniel Sherwin-Simpson joins us now. Good afternoon, Daniel.
Good afternoon, Brooke.
How are things looking across the state?
Yeah, so at least in the west and the south of the state, it's already started to cool down a bit. We have seen the wind change move broadly through the southern agricultural area, although the wind change doesn't necessarily mean the cool change with this one, unfortunately. So it is still a little bit warmer out there. But those places that are really warm are the eastern parts of the state. Renmark so far has gotten up to 45.7 degrees so far today. And yesterday it saw its January record broken. It got to 47.3, breaking its previous record of 47.1 that was happened on the 14th of January 2001. Loxton also saw its record broken as well, and we did see some 48-degree temperatures at Woodna and Tarcoola. They didn't break records, but just very notably quite hot. So things have backed off a little bit today, and that cool change is certainly on its way for the agricultural area at least. Once you get out into the north of the state and the east, things are going to still stay hot. So as I mentioned, that Renmark is up to 45.7 so far, but places in the far north can still expect another hot and also windy day. In terms of the winds today, we've seen things start to pick up quite a bit throughout the east. Keith has blown some gusts up near the sort of 70 kilometre an hour mark. We're already seeing a bit of raised dust through the Riverland. So right now, over about Wakery or so, there's probably quite a bit of dust floating around that I can see here on the satellite picture. So those eastern districts are unfortunately getting a bit of raised dust. Once we see that cool change move through, we could actually see it lifting some dust through the pastorals as well. In terms of what we're looking at tomorrow, things will really settle down quite a bit. Temperatures will generally be dropping by 5 to 10, possibly even 15 degrees in some places. Renmark has a drop of 18 degrees tomorrow, so things will really cool off and settle back down. We'll see the risk of these damaging winds that are possible today ease into the evening. We could possibly still see some more wind gusts with a bit of afternoon thunderstorm activity in the damaging wind warning area, but conditions will generally settle. Fire weather conditions will settle, but just because the fire weather conditions have backed off a bit does not mean that these fires that are currently in the landscape are still a risk. The main fires northeast of Ceduna, there's one that looks like it's backed off a little bit. We have also noted a couple fires down in the southeast of the state. There's one burning sort of west of Coonawarra that's of note that we're keeping a keen eye on with the CFS. So that fire risk is not entirely eased, and it probably won't ease off until we're well into the weekend, but generally settled conditions ahead, Brooke.
No worries. Daniel, thanks very much for your time on the Country Hour today.
Cheers. Thank you very much.
That was Daniel Sherwin-Simpson from the Bureau of Meteorology. And Des, as I mentioned before, there was a couple of those record-breaking towns. I've heard some in the Riverland. Woodna, 48.2 degrees, the hottest day in 7 years. But if you had one of those record-breaking hot days yesterday, let me know. What did you get up to? 0467 922 783. Send me a text and let me know. Quick look at the Western Inlands for today. Upper Western sunny with winds north to northeasterly, 25 to 35 kilometres per hour. Shifting south to southwesterly, 25 to 40 kilometres per hour in the early afternoon. Overnight temperatures falling to 23 to 30, with daytime temperatures reaching 38 to 44. For the Lower Western, sunny with winds northwest to northeasterly, 15 to 25 kilometres per hour. Turning south to southwesterly, 25 to 35 kilometres per hour before dawn. And overnight temperatures falling to between 17 and 27, with daytime temperatures reaching 30 to 41. It's 33 minutes past 12.
This is ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Thanks for joining me on the Country Hour today. Brooke Neindorf with you. And coming up in the next 25 minutes or so, Fat Farmers launches its new health hub with some recent success at its first showing late last year.
We had 50 people that we screened in conjunction with Flinders International point of care testing and Preventive Health SA. So, yeah, really a great opportunity really to get the health hub out into the rural communities.
We'll have more on that very shortly. We'd love to hear from you, though. If a health hub like that came to town where you could get checks done and a general health check, would you take it up? It's a great idea. Let me know why or why not. 0467 922 783. But before that, let's get the latest from the newsroom. We're joined by Matt Coleman. Good afternoon, Matt.
Hello, Brooke. In the news this afternoon, more than 600 lightning strikes across the state's southeast overnight have sparked multiple fires, with fire crews working to contain the blazes. About 14 country fire service trucks and forestry brigades are mopping up a fire at Mayup west of Panola. A fire at the Boolagoon Conservation Park has been contained, and crews have also been responding to a fire in the Narkat Conservation Park north of Bordertown. The Country Fire Service is also monitoring a fire burning in the Yellabinna Wilderness area northeast of Sujuna. It says there's no immediate threat to surrounding communities or homes. And SA's most senior public servant says he was staggered to see suggestions that the government was delaying algal bloom investigations for political gain. The algal bloom parliamentary inquiry is investigating comments by the ecologist Faith Coleman. The department staff had been asked to delay investigating causes of the bloom until after March's state election. More news at 1 o'clock.
Thanks very much, Matt. Matt Coleman in the newsroom. And we've had a text come through. We're talking about total fire bans before we had the CFS on, checking in how things are looking across the state. And a majority of the state is under a total fire ban, with a lot of regions extreme today, but not everywhere is. And Mary's texted in from Adelaide and said, I don't understand why there's not a total fire ban for the entire state of SA on such dangerous conditions as today. Surely this makes more sense. Yeah, it's something that the CFS has spoken about before, and obviously they work with the Bureau of Meteorology and looking at different regions of how things work, but yeah, maybe something they need to look at into the future as well. Now, the National Farmers Federation has a brand new CEO. Michael Guerin has been appointed to the role. Originally from the South Island of New Zealand, he's previously served as the chief executive of Queensland Peak Body Ag Force for 8 years and currently is the acting CEO at New South Wales Farmers. The appointment comes after the previous CEO, Troy Williams, left the role in July after just 4 months in the role. It's been a bit of a turbulent time for the NFF, with New South Wales Farmers resigning their membership in April of last year and the Victorian Farmers Federation paying hardship fees. They also had previously stated their intent to leave, though it looks now like they'll probably stick around. So to learn more about why he took up the role, Charles Geary spoke to Michael Guerin earlier this morning.
Look, I'm in my late 50s, have been incredibly proud to represent producers over the last 9 odd years, and to be given the chance, and I would describe it as a privilege of representing producers across the nation in the NFF role, is something I'm very humbled and honoured to have been offered. I chased it hard and I'm very lucky to have got the role. There is an incredibly urgent need for producers' voices to be better heard in decision-making corridors in the federal parliament. And what the NFF is a National Farmers Federation, a federation of members, an organisation that can unite industry and ensure we have a strong single voice on important issues like trade, like policy settings around, for example, the EPBC Act, where there's a really important conversation going on at the moment. And if you look at, for example, the economics of farming from a young person's perspective, you take the costs of buying land, the cost of capital, and you put across that the imposition of risk that goes with capital and farming, there's no profitability left in a game where we need to be attracting young people in, and where we know that if we can attract young people in, then the Australian farming system can support regional communities, support social infrastructure, support better environmental outcomes, and give us that peace and prosperity, should I say, that food security gives us.
Let's just quickly talk about something you brought up there, was the need for unity and I guess for and stability in a sense. Last year for the NFF, it wasn't maybe the easiest times for the organisation on that front. Let's start with the obvious. The previous CEO only lasted 4 months in the role. Seems like there's a need for stability at the top of the organisation right now. Are you going to be able to provide that?
I certainly plan to. There is a need for stability, for leadership, for strength, and for unity. And unity doesn't mean one organisation. Unity means all the organisations that represent producers in various ways working together, recognising the strength of that united voice. And yes, the NFF family has gone through some changes and challenges in the recent past. I've been a part of that as a member of the Federated Family in my role at AgForce and more lately at the New South Wales Farmers. Some tough conversations going on, but being in those conversations, what I also know is you have a room full of people who are dedicated to a better future for an industry where they really understand the upside and the opportunity for Australia and getting it right, who are committed to the cause, who give incredibly of their time and their intellect across, you know, committees, various elected roles, many hundreds of senior producers giving through different organisations in the NFF, through members council, etc. So a dedicated group going through a reasonably tough period, but all with an interest and best outcomes for producers and understanding the opportunity and recognising the value in working together and in unity. And the conversations have been tough, but it's going to end up in the right place.
Let's just quickly talk about some of those members. New South Wales Farmers have given its notice to resign its membership. Victoria Farmers Federation are currently paying hardship fees, having previously signalled an intent to leave. Looks like they'll be sticking around. But is there some work here that needs to be done to build trust with the membership?
There's a lot of work we need to do, and as said, the last couple of years has been reasonably tough, and you've mentioned a couple of the elements of it, but I'm taking on the role because I'm really confident we can bring it back together. And like any federation or any group of organisations or indeed any community, you go through times of change, and when that change is imposed upon you, sometimes it's a challenging moment. But when you have good, strong leadership, care for country, care for industry, a recognition of what it can contribute going forward, then out of those tough conversations come a reset model fit for purpose that can really make a difference. And that's what we've been going through. We've been going through the tough part of some very strong conversations, doing it over the last couple of years, and out of that will come a richness which will enable the NFF to reset and do its job even better. And I applied for the role very confident about that, very knowledgeable about a lot of the senior leaders in the group, knowing everybody wants to end up in the right place. And you're right, there's some tough elements to it, but I am confident it'll come back together, and agriculture and regional communities will be the beneficiaries of all of the work and all of those tough conversations and all of that commitment by many people over the last few years.
Michael Guerin speaking to Charles Gary. And Mr. Guerin is the newly announced CEO of the National Farmers Federation, and he'll start in that role as of March 23rd. Now, just a reminder that SAGET funding applications are now open, and researchers, grower groups and industry organisations are invited to apply for the funding round, which will support projects that address emerging challenges and deliver practical benefits to SA grain growers. So it's for 2026, and some of the work that they're particularly interested in looks at summer fallow management, more sustainable grain production, and also able to demonstrate practical ways to reduce carbon emission, but looking for all sorts of projects. So if you've got an idea, put it forward. Applications must be received by the end of this month, though. So Friday, 30th of January, all relevant application guidelines and forms can be found on the SAGET website at sagit.com.au/funding. And they'll be assessed then in February, and then applicants will be notified in late March. So make sure you get those in, because there's been plenty of great projects happening in the past. Brooke Neindorf with you. It's coming up to 18 minutes to one.
Quiz show's too easy for you. Not hard quiz, unless you're an expert in, say, sewage or vintage sewing machines. Everyone's good at something.
Join Tom Gleeson for the brand new season of Hard Quiz.
Hard!
Back tonight on ABC TV and ABC iView.
Now, the Fat Farmers Rural Health Initiative is hoping that 2026 will be the year they can get more rural and regional people getting health checks. Now, late last year, they launched their branded Health Hub, which is a decked-out semi-trailer that can do on-the-spot health checks. And CEO Richard Sheppey says they have plans to tour rural SA, visiting field days, conferences and community events. And I spoke with him, and he told me that it's a dream that's become a reality for Fat Farmers founder Ben Wondersitz.
Yeah, so I think Ben would have said that the Health Hub's really been a vision of his for a few years now, to have a purpose-built truck, semi-trailer that can go around regional rural communities and deliver some health screening and messaging. And that's, we managed to pull that off. Soft launch last weekend up at the Jamestown pageant was a great event up there. We had 50 people that we screened in conjunction with Flinders International point of care testing and Preventive Health SA. So yeah, really a great opportunity really to get the Health Hub out into the rural communities and support Jamestown. So it was really good.
Did you have to, I guess, prompt people to come and line up, or was there quite a want for people to come in and get tested?
We were really pleasantly surprised. You never quite know at events like this as to how many people are going to line up for testing, screening. You know what people are like in rural areas, that can tend to be a little bit sceptical about it. But no, feedback was really good. Uptake was really good. And we didn't have to herd too many people in. Obviously, the Health Hub it stands out pretty well. Some people may have seen it about in the press. Yeah, the graphics on it are fantastic. So it's certainly a bit of a conversation starter.
Do you think it has prompted people to follow up on some more health checks as well?
Yeah, I think so, without a doubt. What we're about is really trying to raise some awareness and education. So what we were testing for up at Jamestown at the weekend was cholesterol levels and diabetes, blood glucose. So I think it's always good just to be able to give people an opportunity, really, just to get a quick test, maybe see what their results are. I think there's probably, like, we can all be a little bit surprised as to what the results come back at some days. I got tested for my cholesterol 6 months ago at the first one we did, and maybe probably, let's say, rethink a little bit of my dietary choices. I did get tested again on Sunday, and please say my cholesterol's back down. So, yes, I think so.
Ben touched on this a bit when I spoke to him about the launch of the Health Hub a few weeks ago. But tell us about how the semi-trailer is set up.
So it's a fit-for-purpose, purpose-built semi-trailer. It's ex-Queensland Health dental van. So it's got two consulting rooms, surgeries. It's got a nurse's station, reception area, 5 air-conditioned rooms, wheelchair lift. So it really, really is, yeah, exactly as the name suggests, purpose-built health hub. We haven't had to do too much work to it, which has been great. Branded it up, tidied it up. We've had Hardy have supported us with a prime mover on the front of it. So, yeah, it's coming together really well.
What are the plans for the health hub moving into 2026?
2026, we want to see it really moving around rural communities around South Australia. We will be lining up at field days, shows, industry conferences, and also around a lot of our towns where we've got fat farmers and active farmers communities. We won't necessarily be screening in every town, but we will be partnering with different people, skin checks, as I say, point of care testing, also partnering with iFarmWell, with the Weather It Together campaign, etc. So really what it is, we've got a great facility where we believe we can probably encourage people to come and have a chat about things that maybe they wouldn't have done normally.
And Richard, I guess, you know, if you look forward 12 months to, say, 2026, December next year, what sort of point do you want to get to by having this health hub? And you know, if I chat to you in 12 months' time, what do you want to be looking at as something that fat farmers and also active farmers that you've recently joined with has achieved?
If we can have, I would like to think that we can have visited 20 to 30 communities around South Australia, provided some health screening. So they re-roll the numbers up from there. You know, if we had 50 through in 4 hours on Friday, the numbers build up pretty quickly. The impact we can have is huge, but really, if it changes the life or saves the life of one or two people, you can't put a price on that. 12 months' time, 2 years' time, we would love to think that maybe we've got another health hub in a different state. Plans for us as the organisation is very much to scale this across Australia. Yeah, health hubs in multiple states is the big vision piece.
Fat Farmers CEO Richard Sheppey, and keep an eye out for that Fat Farmers Health Hub semi-trailer that's going to be travelling around the state this year. So one to keep an eye out for. Let's go to New South Wales now, and as we've been talking about, we've had it pretty hot the last few days here in South Australia, and the same can be said for far west New South Wales as well. For many of them, though, it's business as usual, so we're going to head to Killara Station, which is via Tilpa, where Andrew Schmidt caught up with grazier Justin McClure about how things are looking out that way, his plans for 2026, and the prep that goes into high temp days.
You have to keep water up to our stock and keep them hydrated and have them on enough feed to keep them plugging away, and just do the bare minimum rather than go and do the pommy thing and play in the inclement sun.
We had a bit of a system go through just before Christmas. Did you get any rain up your way?
Look, unfortunately, Andrew, we didn't. There was good rain down the river between here and Wilcannia. Yeah, we just in a dry hole here at the minute. And, yeah, that's just summer and life and living where we do. So, yeah, here in northeast, it missed out. But, yeah, really good. Some of our community members downstream copped up to 50 mil. So, that relieved the tension down there prior to Christmas, which is pretty good.
Well, I was just going to say, Justin, how's it looking on the ground for you and your stock there at the moment as far as your feed's concerned?
Yeah, look, we're getting through. We've got a heap of kangaroos sort of competing for the little bit of grass we've got, and competing for grass and competing for water. Yeah, it's tight enough on the back of a couple hundred mil, 250 and 200 mil last year. Yeah, not the best outlook going into summer or going forward. So, yeah, things are tight, but, yeah, we're getting through by managing stock numbers and trying to control our ferals, mate. Yeah.
Water situation?
Look, yeah, water in the river. River has run incredibly strongly well for the last 4 years, which is sort of unprecedented. We're sitting about between 400 and 500 megs a day here now. Major concern is that the water quality of our river is incredibly poor. It, with having a river run constantly for nearly 1,600 days now, and we've still got a problem with water quality. The nutrient level in the river has just sort of propagated algal growth. River looks really, really a translucent green. So we're really looking for a flow from upriver. Not a lot of water in the system. Got a little bit here the other day that sort of came out of the border rivers. I see there's water in the Gwadar and there's water in the Namoi. Unfortunately, the current rules we've got, that water up there is accessible to extractors. So hopefully that gets through. I see there's sort of a couple of thousand megs there at Narrabri and also some other water up there. So let's hope that mm-hmm. filters through the system and freshens our stream up. So yeah, what we don't need is an algal outbloom here and going down the river to Mindy.
Yeah, although we saw some photos just prior to Christmas, and I think there were some postings only, might have been earlier this week, it's like a green sludge, and we're talking about the river here between Louth and Tilpra, and even some of the images we're seeing out of Wilcannia aren't that flash. It wouldn't be very inviting, would you, to put a toe in the water?
No, definitely not. Yeah, it looks like it. If you liken it to the green coolant you put in your motor cars, that's what it looks like, and you put it in a, well, obviously our hot water services, those of us that have to use the river water, as soon as you heat it, it emits some terrible odours, so it's you just can't shower in it. So, yeah, not very pleasant at all, Andrew, but lucky we've got a little bit of rainwater to back us up. Yeah.
And, Justin, once you get through this period, say end of February, you roll into March, a lot of what you do, no doubt, will rely on what falls from above. But you got any major plans for 2026?
Look, rain's a catalyst here. Other than ongoing maintenance and that sort of stuff, and adjusting stock numbers to what grass we've got, the rain is the point of catalyst, and that will determine which way we go. So whether we go, we need reproduction to generate cash flow. So the rams are in our joining window. So as soon as we can get a decent break, then the rams will go back in, and we'll look to get back into production. So at the minute, it's a holding pattern, waiting to see what the rain does, and control our ferals. We've had issues with pigs. The Nero shoot here prior to Christmas sort of took nearly 500 pigs off our country, which is very significant. We've probably taken another 200 to 300 ourselves with trapping and just routine station management. The pigs are hungry. Kangaroos are in huge numbers, compromising our grass. So that's what we're up to at the moment, Andrew. And you add wild dogs into that equation. I think there was 8 dogs taken or controlled here. Right on our boundary here, just prior to Christmas, and you've just got to be just always vigilant, I guess, and keeping your eye on what's going on around us.
The biggest explosion in feral animals on properties here in the Far West, has it been pigs, Justin?
Look, pigs would be number one. Kangaroos would be very, very close behind. We've been a lot more fortunate here in the eastern part of the Western Division in that we've had 3 or 4 reasonable seasons in a row, and also we've had Cuttabara Paroo flows that have provided conditions that have been advantageous for natural increase in numbers. And when that bountiful time's come to an end, there has been a huge increase in population of kangaroos, pigs, and wild dogs. So we're at the mercy of the elements and also the natural predators.
Grazier Justin McClure from Clara Station speaking with Andrew Schmidt. And staying in New South Wales, Water New South Wales has issued a red alert for blue-green algae for Lake Menindee. The red alert warning applies to untreated water and will remain in place until monitoring and test results confirm the risk has sufficiently diminished. People should avoid consuming untreated water from this water body and prevent pets and livestock from drinking the water as well. And mussels or yabbies should not be eaten from red alert warning areas, and a precautionary approach to eating fish has been advised by the company. So stay tuned for any updates on that one as well. It's coming up to 5 minutes to one.
Sulagong to serve.
The ABC brings you the story of an icon.
Avon Goolagong.
I know.
Want you to win.
Goolagong.
That's what I'm here for.
Stream all the episodes now on ABC iView.
This is ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
We just heard there about Goolagong, which is on ABC iView at the moment. Fantastic. If you haven't watched it yet, I watched it last weekend. Very, very good. So get on to that one. Now, finally today, the Port Lincoln Prison is looking for a new person to lead its agricultural program. The program has been running for many years and offers prisoners at the prison the chance to work on the farm that runs broadacre crops, livestock, flowers and fruit and veg. It also helps the local aquaculture industry with making oyster baskets. I spoke with Prison Acting General Manager Blake Lukic about what sort of person they're looking for to take on the role.
So the role is for the farm industry officer here at Port Lincoln Prison, and it's about delivering a professional agricultural program while supporting prisoner rehabilitation through meaningful and real-world work.
So what sort of qualifications would be needed for this role?
So we're seeking a motivated trained agricultural professional with experience in broadacre farming and cereal cropping. This includes livestock husbandry and animal welfare, understanding of agricultural machinery and its operations, and those that are competent in workplace safety and mentoring.
So tell us, Blake, about the prison's ag program. What does it look like and what does it involve?
So at Port Lincoln Prison, our farming program offers prisoners the opportunity to develop real-world agricultural skills, developing pride in their work and pathways towards post-employment post-release. As a farm industry officer, you play a vital mentoring role working closely with low-security prisoners in a professional farm setting that mirrors industry standards. The program involves... So here at Port Lincoln Prison, we have 187 hectares of cropping land where we produce cereal crops, including barley, oats, canola and hay for livestock. The program also includes animal husbandry, where you'll care for Angus cattle, alpacas, and we also have a gisted sheep. In addition to this, the prisoners will participate in industry-linked work for the region, such as refurbishment of construction of oyster baskets for the oyster industry, construction of oyster posts and lines, and assembly of rock bags for mussel farming. So this is a combination of agriculture and agricultural support that makes Port Lincoln Prison unique within the South Australian prison system.
I was going to ask, is this a unique thing for a prison to have a farm set up like this and being able to work jobs such as agriculture and aquaculture?
So there are agricultural programs to some degree in other prisons, like the Cadell Training Centre, but the point of difference is that broadacre cereal cropping component is very unique to Port Lincoln Prison, and also the aquaculture component with the construction of oyster baskets and mussel bags, that is very unique to this location.
Very, very air peninsular, isn't it?
It is.
How many prisoners are involved in this program?
For those that are successful in working here, they'll work with 17 low security individuals.
And I guess what's the aim of the program? What ultimately do you hope that prisoners can get out of a program like this one?
Well, we hope that they gain skills and vocational training qualifications that they can use for real world employment. The whole idea of these sorts of programs is about meaningful engagement and getting post-release employment. We know that skills and vocational training is critical in people gaining employment post-release.
Blake, you're mentioning there obviously about the broadacre cropping. What did you put in? What did you put in this year?
So this year the prison planted canola and wheat, and we were able to reap 276 tonne of canola and 70 tonne of wheat.
and they'd be pretty happy with that?
We were very happy with the outcome from those crops, for sure.
And where can you see the future of this program going, Blake?
I think there's a lot of growth potential in the program here at Port Lincoln Prison. We're looking for someone who has some ambition to help grow the program locally for Port Lincoln. We want to build networks within the community. We want to support local businesses. So there's a lot of capacity to improve here, and we're looking for the right person that can help lead the way.
That was Port Lincoln Prison Acting General Manager Blake Lukic, and the applications for the prison role closed this Sunday. A great program that they've got set up there out at the Port Lincoln Prison. If you want to see more about it, there was actually a landline story done a couple of years ago by Evelyn Leckie, so you can jump online and find that one as well, still up there on ABC iView, so you can search for that one. Just type in landline and Port Lincoln Prison. Well, that's all we've got time for on the program for today. I'll be back with you next week, so make sure you stay tuned. You can jump online to abc.net.au/rural for all the latest stories from right across the region, and stay tuned to your local ABC radio as well for any updates in regards to total fire bans, bushfires in your region, and you can also check in on the CFS website as well. Have a good weekend. Have a good Friday afternoon, whatever you're up to. It's coming up to news time. It's 1 o'clock.
Join Charlie Pickering for a news update like no other.
Aren't you busy watching the news so I don't have to?
Why? The Weekly, back Wednesday, January 14, straight after Hard Quiz on ABC TV and ABC.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.